The Quilt Fiction Podcast presents Friendship Album, 1933, a novel by Frances O'Rourke Dowell, read by the author.
Chapter 39. Dorothy always had misgivings about answering the Wilcoxes' front door. When Bess had been in mourning and refused to get out of bed, Dorothy was always tempted to ignore it when someone knocked or rang the bell. Usually it was a friend of Bess's from church who insisted she be allowed upstairs for a visit, and Dorothy would have to politely, yet firmly, deny her entrance. There were one or two who'd gotten around her. Inevitably, they came back downstairs, wondering out loud if Dorothy had been wise to let them in, given Bess's state. Nowadays, it was just as likely to be a traveling salesman at the front door, and here, too, Dorothy had to be resolute. While Bess was nobody's fool, she could be a soft touch, especially if she was keeping up with her daily devotional readings. "You never know when you're entertaining angels unaware," Bess would remind Dorothy when she saw the salesman with his cases coming up the front walk. "St. Paul wasn't talking about the Fuller Brush Man," Dorothy scolded as she blocked Bess's path, "or the Pots and Pans Man, either." So when the doorbell rang on Tuesday morning, Dorothy was inclined to ignore it, especially since Bess was over at St. Luke's. Delivery men came to the back door, and if it was the postman with the package, he'd leave it on the porch. But what if it was a telegram? Dorothy didn't know what reason someone could have for sending Bess a telegram, but once the idea got in her head, she couldn't let it go. It could be a message from Bess's mother, who was exactly the sort of person who would prefer the drama of a telegram over a simple phone call. "Oh, you're just being silly," Dorothy told herself as she made her way to the front hall, and of course she was, but ever since Wallace's heart attack, she'd gotten superstitious about things. The fact that the man was alive was a miracle. The doctor said if they'd gotten Wallace to the hospital 10 minutes later than they had, his heart would have suffered permanent damage. Dorothy had thanked God at least 100 times that they'd gotten there before it was too late. But she'd also started doing little things, little good luck tricks, like tapping the faucet 3 times before she turned on the water to do the dishes, or putting on her left shoe before her right, even though she'd always done it the other way around ever since she could remember. She knew it was superstitious nonsense, and it was starting to seem a little crazy, but she couldn't help but feel that if she didn't do these things, something bad would happen, and too many bad things were happening right now. Wallace had lost his job in the wake of his heart attack, which Dorothy couldn't even let herself think about. 26 years of loyal service, and that's how Milton Falls Dairy repaid the man? Hannah continued to insist that she would be taking the children back to Chicago as soon as Wallace was well enough to care for himself. Robert, her ever-dutiful eldest child, had invited Dorothy and Wallace to move in with his family, but Dorothy didn't love that idea. Still, they might need the money from selling the house if Wallace couldn't find work once he was better. So she would make herself answer the front door, because who knew what horrible thing would happen if she didn't. Dorothy's thoughts were so preoccupied with potential disasters, it took her a moment to recognize the man standing on the porch. But when she did, she took 2 steps back. "Jasper Freeman, what on earth are you doing here?" "Hello, Miss Dorothy," her handsome son-in-law replied, removing his cap and bowing slightly. "I hoped I'd find you here." Dorothy looked behind her, even though she knew no one else was home. "What are you doing coming to the front door? You need to go around back." "You want me to walk around the back of the house and knock again?" Jasper sounded confused. "That doesn't make any sense." Dorothy let out an aggravated sigh as she gestured for Jasper to enter. "I suppose not, but only because nobody's here. But don't you know colored men get shot for knocking on white people's front doors?" "You really think that the lady you work for is going to shoot me, Miss Dorothy? Or that anybody in this neighborhood would? Oh, they might call the police, I admit, but nobody's going to shoot me." Dorothy ignored him. "Come on into the kitchen, and I'll get you a glass of water. Does Hannah know you're in town?" "I just saw her at the library. She suggested I come see you before I go over to the house. In fact, she said maybe I shouldn't go over to the house at all." "Oh, you're not going over to the house," Dorothy told him as she took a glass from the kitchen cabinet. I don't mean to be inhospitable, but my husband is recovering from a heart attack. He doesn't need another one. Jasper took a seat at the kitchen table. I understand. I know Mr. Johnson isn't happy with me, taking his daughter and grandchildren away, but there's money to be made in Chicago, or at least there was. What do you mean there was? Dorothy asked, turning to face her son-in-law. Did you get laid off?
No, I didn't, Jasper said, shaking his head slowly. I did not get laid off, nor was I fired.
Dorothy opened her mouth to ask another question, but stopped herself. Jasper was staring out the window with a strange look in his eyes.
No, Miss Dorothy, not laid off nor fired, but I saw things no man, woman, or child should see. Saw things right in front of my eyes that I'll never unsee.
Did someone you know get hurt? Dorothy asked, softening.
I heard that people get hurt all the time in those places. It's made me worry about you.
A fellow named Willis McLeod. He was a good man. Jasper nodded, as though to emphasize his point. A very good man. One of the few white men in my plant. Meatpacking is mostly colored now. And we got along. I won't tell you what happened, Miss Dorothy, because you shouldn't have to know about such things. But I can't shake it. He was standing right next to me.
Finally, Jasper looked up. I tried to go back to work the next morning, but my legs wouldn't carry me there. I thought about looking for work at another plant, but they want to know why you left your last job. If I said I left because of what happened to Willis, I wouldn't get hired. And if I said I wanted better wages, I wouldn't get hired. Truth be told, there was nothing I could say. And meatpacking is all unionized now, so you can't slip in through the cracks. Say you just moved in from out of town. I was on the roll books, a known quantity. Besides, after what I saw, I'm not sure I could work at a meatpacking plant again, even if I got hired somewhere else.
Dorothy was surprised to find she was still holding the empty glass. She walked over to the sink to fill it and then carried it to Jasper. Does Hannah know about this?
I just told her now. The fact is, it only happened last week. Yesterday morning is when I realized I was done as a meat packer, so I packed a few things in my bag and hitched a ride out of town. Fellow I know was headed to Columbus and dropped me off in Milton Falls on his way.
Where's your bag? Did you leave it with Hannah?
Jasper tilted his head toward the front of the house. It's on the porch. I'll take it over to Mama's after I'm done here.
You must be looking forward to seeing your babies.
Oh, man, yeah, Jasper said. I've been missing them children something fierce.
Good to see you, Jasper, Dorothy said, reaching over to cover his hand with hers. But why'd you stop by here first, before you went to Miss Rose's?
Jasper took a sip of water before speaking. Miss Dorothy, I know you want us to stay in Milton Falls, but I'm thinking we might pack up and move to Detroit. They're hiring in the auto factories, and I hear the money's good. I just felt you should know and not get your hopes up when you heard I was in town.
Dorothy began twisting her wedding ring in clockwise circles, another one of her new good luck tricks.
There are jobs here, Jasper. Good jobs. I know a woman who owns a new business in town, and it's doing real good. She's been looking for someone just like you for months.
I know all about that, Miss Dorothy. You wrote us a letter, remember? But I don't know if that's the right thing for me. I want to be more than just a handyman.
Well, you would be. You'd be a carpenter and a machinist and a repairman and who knows what else. You could probably be the building manager or the foreman or whatever they call it, Dorothy said. This is a growing business, son. It's not some tiny hometown concern. Florence has orders coming in from all over the country. She's got quilt orders from department stores across Ohio, and she wants to get her quilts into Macy's and Sears.
Jasper looked out the window again.
I don't know. It's not just the job. It's the atmosphere. I've lived in Milton Falls all my life. Going to Chicago was like a shock to my system, in a good way. Made me see that the world was a whole lot bigger than I ever realized.
He turned back to look at Dorothy. I know you're not happy about Hannah working as a cleaning woman, but she was meeting people in Chicago. Artists, writers, journalists, all of them colored. They didn't think twice about Hannah's job. They'd all been there. It's hard being colored wherever you go, but in a big place, you've got more opportunities. You can actually pull yourself up.
You can't do that here.
Times are changing, Jasper.
They're not changing fast enough for me, Miss Dorothy. I want good things for my children. I want them to grow up to be doctors and lawyers and scientists. I don't think that will happen if we stay here.
You might be surprised, Dorothy said as Jasper stood. I think it's happening right now.
You have to think that, Miss Dorothy, with your whole family here. But I don't happen to agree.
Dorothy rose and followed Jasper to the back door.
I hope you'll wait a few weeks before you take off for Detroit, she told him. I'd like for Wallace to be back on his feet before you go. I could ask Florence about getting you some temporary work in the meantime.
I thank you, Miss Dorothy, Jasper said, his hand on the doorknob. I could use the money, but I'll ask her myself if you don't mind.
Just make sure she understands that you're my son-in-law, Dorothy said. The business is over on River Drive, the old mill, building number 5.
Jasper placed his cap back on his head and then tipped it at Dorothy. I best be off to see Mama and the babies. Hope they still recognize me.
Dorothy watched her son-in-law through the kitchen window. Detroit. And then what? Los Angeles? New York? The moon?
Twisting her wedding ring, she turned back to the kitchen. What had she been doing before Jasper's knock on the door? She honestly couldn't remember.
Well, Bess would be home in 30 minutes, so she might as well get lunch ready. A tomato rabbit would be nice if Bess had cheese. Or was it too warm for a hot lunch? Maybe cold beef sandwiches would be better.
But Dorothy didn't move from the window. She just kept twisting that ring, wondering over and over when some good luck was going to come her way.
It's strange having our bee with just the 3 of us, Bess said the next morning as they were drinking coffee in Eula's kitchen. It doesn't really seem like a bee. For one thing, we won't have the weekly reading of Emmeline's column.
Will the paper even publish a column this week, what with Emmeline being out of town?
Didn't she say they were going to run an old column, one of her earlier ones? Eula said from the sink, where she was rinsing out her coffee cup. Maybe that one about the tools that every quilter needs.
That's right, Dorothy confirmed. She mentioned that a couple weeks ago.
I wish we didn't have to wait until next week to hear about Emmeline's trip to Emporia, Bess said. I hope everything went well with Mrs. Kretzinger. I worry a little.
Worry about what? Dorothy asked, thinking of several possible answers to that question.
Oh, you know Emmeline. She's so sure of herself and convinced of her own gifts, as she should be, I suppose.
Bess took a sip of coffee before continuing.
But at the same time, I sense a vein of insecurity running through her. I mean, isn't that where her desire to be a nationally known quilting columnist comes from? She writes a perfectly lovely column that reaches thousands of people right here. Thousands of people know who she is. Can you imagine? I don't think there are more than 20 people outside of my church congregation who've ever heard my name. So why does Emily need even more exposure, more acclaim?
Anyway, I just hope that she doesn't feel insecure around Mrs. Kretzinger and start showing off.
What that woman needs is a mother, Dorothy said, slathering some of Eula's peach preserves onto a biscuit.
These biscuits are delicious, Eula. How'd you get them to stand so tall?
Eula returned to the table and sat down. The trick is to make sure their sides are touching each other when you put them in the pan. That way they give each other support while they're baking. If you bake each biscuit standing on its own, it just won't get that high.
An analogy for life, Bess laughed, sitting up straight and puffing out her chest. We need each other's support to stand tall.
Dorothy wondered if that was true, and if it was there some way Bess and Eula could support her even more than they already had? Because the fact was, she'd started to feel like there wasn't a thing she could do to help herself. She couldn't make Jasper and Hannah stay in Milton Falls, she couldn't make Wallace get well, and she couldn't make Milton Falls Dairy rehire him.
Eula reached over and touched Dorothy on the arm. You've got such a funny look on your face right now. What's on your mind?
Dorothy's throat tightened. Oh, I don't know. A million things. I just feel like the world's crashing down around me.
She stopped to wipe her eyes. I wish you could help me, but I don't think you can. You can't make Jasper and Hannah stay in Milton Falls, and you can't get Wallace a job. You can't help me get back to sleep when I wake up in the middle of the night worrying about my grandchildren.
Well, why can't we? Bess said with a stomp of her foot. Why not? We're smart women with a total of 9 children between us. We ought to be able to come up with a plan. Not to help you fall back asleep, but to find solutions to your problems. Dorothy, who only a moment ago had felt like the floor was about to open up and swallow her whole, started to laugh. Look at Bess Wilcox stomping her foot like a 5-year-old. I did have a thought the other day, Eula offered. Just a passing thought, but maybe. Well, maybe you should encourage Hannah to apply for a teaching job at the new school. I have to believe she's a born teacher. I've never met a brighter child than Alice, nor a better educated 6-year-old. You could say, Hannah, I know you're moving to Detroit, but why not apply for a teaching job just for the practice of applying? She could apply to be a substitute teacher, or even a teacher's helper. Once she gets inside that school, it might be hard to get her out. Well, I suppose she might be convinced to apply if I put it that way, Dorothy reluctantly agreed. And you're right, she is a born teacher. I suspect that's what she'd be doing if she hadn't married Jasper right out of college. But once she started having babies, a part-time job at the library was all she had time for. Bess had stayed silent during this, but Dorothy knew the woman well enough to see a plan was forming behind her eyes. What are you thinking, Bess? She asked. Because I can tell you're thinking something. What that family needs is a house, Bess said. They need a big house with a big yard for the children to run around in. They need a house with a workroom where Jasper can build furniture and work with tools. They need a house with bookcases for all of Hannah's books and a big closet for Alice's art supplies. That's exactly what they need. But Bess, they don't have any money, Dorothy said. They can't afford a house like that. But what if they could afford a house like that? Bess said. What if the monthly payments were in their budget? Dorothy shook her head. You're dreaming, Bess. No such house exists. Bess sat back in her chair, looking excessively pleased with herself. Oh, I think it does. It has to. We just have to find it. Dorothy wanted to believe Bess, but that dream sounded impossible, undoable, and unachievable. Bless Bess's heart, but the world just didn't work that way. Dorothy got up from the table. I need to get that biscuit recipe, Eula, she said as she carried her coffee cup and plate to the sink. Alice has been talking about baking biscuits for an age. I'll write it down for you right now, Eula said. Let me go get my pad and pencil. Eula left a pocket of silence in her wake. When Dorothy turned around, Bess was staring at her. What? Why are you looking at me like that? Because you don't believe me about the house, and I want you to believe me. Let me talk to Joe and see if he can help. Trust that the right thing will happen. Can you do that? Dorothy couldn't do that, but she didn't say so. She just twisted her ring and nodded. We better get to our sewing now, she told Bess, before we run out of time.
Friendship Album 1933, a quilting novel by Frances O'Rourke Dowell. Copyright 2018 by the author. All rights reserved. A production of Milton Falls Media, Incorporated. Learn more about the Quilt Fiction podcast online at quiltfiction.com. Sure.